The Curve with Michelle Martin and Bernard Lim replay from Money FM 89.3.
It is time now for Voice from China, and joining us live is Kaiyuan Capital's Managing Director Brock Silvers. As pressure mounts on Huawei over U.S. allegations on IP theft and evasion on sanctions, the telecom giant's president, Ren Zhengfei, has come forth to defend the company. In his first TV interview with CBS News, Mr. Ren said Huawei never participates in espionage and does not allow any of its employees to carry out such activities, adding, even if Huawei was required by national law to engage in intelligence gathering, the company would never do so. Brock, welcome. Should we believe Huawei when they say they promise not to spy, even if Chinese national law required them to?
Well, good afternoon. But I would say that on this matter, Huawei's assertions probably aren't terribly believable. Look, even if they mean it as an absolute truth, it's just not believable to a non-Chinese audience. No matter what the intent, if Beijing makes a request, it falls under national law, and Huawei or any other company will comply. And I just don't think this can be questioned. Huawei could say we've never spied and we don't intend to start. That may be true for all I know, but there's always the risk that if Beijing asks, companies will comply, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, Australia, New Zealand, and the US have already banned or blocked from supplying equipment for their future 5G mobile broadband networks. In a separate interview with the BBC, Mr. Ren said that there is no way the US can crush the telecoms giant. Do you think the world needs a Huawei because it is the most advanced company in the tech area, as it implies?
Well, Ren Zhengfei is on slightly stronger ground when he claims that Huawei will survive U.S. pressures. Huawei stands to lose a good deal, if not all, of its business in developed markets. The security risks are real. There's a critical mass of developed market countries that have Huawei or plan to do so. The loss of EU markets will be a significant hit, and it's going to sting. And remember, a trade war resolution won't prevent this outcome. It's already given it into the cake at this point. Huawei gets foreign business not because of technology, because of its low pricing. And in less developed countries, that trend could well continue.
Let's look at the UK. It seems Huawei could still have a shot in the UK. Mobile companies like Vodafone, EE and Three are waiting a government review due out in April or March that will decide if they can use Huawei technology. Brock, how likely do you see the UK government giving the green light?
Well, it's hard to see the UK really giving the green light to Huawei now. It's probably a battle that Huawei is destined to lose because, again, the risks are real and significant, and key allies have already gotten on board. Huawei's business outlook in developed economies like the UK simply isn't good, and I would expect the company will refocus on third-world economies where it's got some better positioning.
Well, the move into the limelight is unusual for the normally low-profile founder. Should this be an indicator that of the severity of the issues facing Huawei right now?
You know, I think it's a good thing that CEO Ren Zhengfei has gone public and reaching out to the media. No one else who can realistically make the public case for this company. But his status and reputation, while they're great in China, don't really carry beyond its borders. And I think the issues must be very serious to drag him into the public eye. But I don't think his presence ultimately, aids the resolution of these issues.
He's Kaiyuan Capital's Managing Director. Brock Silvers joining us live from Shanghai. China has unveiled a sweeping plan, Brock, to link Hong Kong and Macau with cities in southern China to create a so-called Greater Bay Area, aiming to transform this coastal region into a high-tech megalopolis to rival California's Silicon Valley. What do you think of China's plan to do this, to turn this area into a Silicon Valley? And what do you think is needed for the plan to succeed?
Well, the plan would need massive piles of gold, an army of central planners, and unwavering political support. I'm somewhat pessimistic on the overall plan. I think it's similar to the New Green Deal in the U.S., lovely visions but not terribly connected to the reality, which is that China's economy is dramatically slowing and infrastructure stimulus is increasingly an ineffective way to battle that slowing. Now we've got a massive project that could be the largest infrastructure project ever, and without a real clear plan how to implement the vision. I think that Beijing economic authorities will probably have more pressing concerns.
Well, economic rivalry aside, especially between Hong Kong and its mainland neighbors, has it been a concern in recent years? Do you think the plan will still further aggravate the rivalry between the two cities?
Well, look, this is a great question. Getting these local governments to cooperate sometimes against their own interests will be like herding cats. And this could especially be the case with Hong Kong, which I think is being asked to advance its own irrelevancy. It's hard to see the plan as a long-term positive for Hong Kong. I think probably a few of these isolated infrastructure projects will get built and may have real benefit, but a lot of the grandiose plan may fade away, much like the Belt and Road Initiative.
Now, some Chinese critics worry the plan could worsen inequality in Guangdong, further isolating the poor there from the richer resources in the south. Do you think this could happen?
Well, it probably would worsen inequality in Guangdong, but I would ask, is this really a bad thing? You know, in elevating a local economy, someone's got to go first. And Guangzhou and Shenzhen might lead the way, but look, equality in our shared poverty just isn't an attractive growth model. So I'm just not sure that inequality would really be the issue. I just am not sure that the plan will be implemented to a great extent. So I think the rural poor of Guangdong can probably rest easy tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, still on China, Brock, Tencent released its latest statistics on Wednesday, revealing that it has invested in more than 700 companies in the past 11 years, including 63 companies that have been listed and 122 unicorns with a market value worth more than $1 billion. What do the latest statistics reveal about Tencent's strategic plans?
Well, I was a bit unnerved by CEO Martin Lau's comments. Seems a little bit directionless to me right now, as if the only real ongoing strategy is to keep investing. And almost all of his comments were focused on the investments. What we didn't hear was a detailed plan for the core businesses. The company seems a bit strategically adrift, and the CEO's lack of acknowledgement increases my concern. And until I see a more defined strategy, I can't recommend the shares.
Brock, are investors concerned about China's government's scrutiny of online content and services and the long-term potential impact this could have on Tencent's core business, as you say, of video games and social media?
Well, for me, those are valid concerns. And when I was recommending Tencent, which I long did, those were core businesses. But I don't think Tencent has a real plan to deal with those issues right now, which is why they don't often speak to them publicly. But for a VC company, those aren't crucial concerns. And I think given the CEO's comments, shareholders have now been told where the focus lies and can sort of make decisions accordingly.
Well, Tencent's president Martin Lau has dismissed criticism that the company had turned into an investment bank that prioritizes investment and growing its core business. He reiterated that the investment is a core strategy for Tencent and allows it to focus on its core business. What are the views from the ground in China?
You know, from my perspective, the company right now is a venture capital firm and not a gaming and social media company. And Martin Lau can, with all due respect, he can deny this all he wants, but I just see that as the simple truth. Calling investment a core strategy, I think, just proves my point. It's not a core, it's the core. And frankly, I like the company much more as a gaming and social media enterprise than I did after it became a VC enterprise.
Well, thank you as always for joining us. He is Brock Silvers, a voice from China. He is Managing Director of Kaiyuan Capital.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.